coming up on Golf Today, we visit with the latest PGA Tour winner, Keegan Bradley. He stops by to talk about the long wait between wins and the meaning of those tears at the Zozo in Japan. And Rory McIlroy chats with Todd Lewis with a chance to climb back to world number one. What does Rory have to do this season for it to be considered a success? Plus, today we learn who was last season's Rookie of the Year, who shot the scores, who took it deep, and who opened up the most eyes. We find out coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. The PGA Tour this week in South Carolina. Some call it South Kakalaki. Congaree. I've never been there. I've seen some pretty pictures. You've actually spent some time at Congaree.
I have. I've wept on the range at Congaree as I have in other places as well, Damon. It's going to be an interesting test this week. This course will be firmer and faster by design than almost any other course these guys play this year. It's certainly one of the best courses that Tom Fazio has signed his name to over the years. And it's also one of the toughest courses on tour. Last year it held the Palmetto Championship when the RBC Canadian Open was cancelled with the pandemic. And it was in the top 10 of toughest tour courses for the year. So these guys can expect a test out there this week.
Firm and fast. I like it already. But let's flash back to 2018 for a moment. If you recall, that was the BMW Championship, because before this past weekend, that was Keegan Bradley's last PGA Tour victory just over 4 years ago. That year, Keegan held off Justin Rose in a playoff for a Monday finish outside of Philadelphia. Yeah, it's just a new father. What a great moment for Keegan. Now, over the weekend in Japan, it was Keegan Bradley in the winner's circle at the Zozo Championship. Shot that 68 in the final round to win by a single shot over Andrew Putnam and Ricky Fowler. And was visibly emotional following the victory. Take a look at the longest droughts that ended on the PGA Tour in 2022. You see Keegan having to wait more than 4 years longer than his peers, Xander Schauffele and Ches Reavy. And Keegan joins us now from Congaree. Keegan, congratulations. I always considered you more killer than crier, but there you were with the waterworks on FaceTime after the win. Why do you think it all impacted you so strongly?
Man, I have no idea. I don't know what came over me. I just couldn't keep it together ever. You know, once the second part of my career with my family, everything's changed in my life and the perspective on things, and to be able to share that with my family and my wife and was really something special. I couldn't keep it together. And then when I spoke to my wife, I lost it. It was really strange for me too. I can't remember the last time I cried, and I couldn't stop.
Keegan, it had been 4 years since your last win. You've always been one of the premier ball strikers on tour. You've had an enormous breakthrough over the last couple of years in your putting. How did you get to that point? And was there some kind of eureka moment where you realized you'd made the progress you were looking for?
Yeah, I mean, it was a much harder transition than I was expecting. When they banned the belly putter, I didn't just lose the belly putter. I lost thousands of hours of practice, of feel, of when I'm nervous, this is how I feel. I remember making this putt to win this tournament. I lost all of that. And not only did I lose that, the other guys had gained that on me. So it's taken me a lot longer to get back to where I was. But, you know, working with Darren May and Phil Kenyon really is when things started to turn around. And it feels so good to make putts. When you're not making putts, the colors are darker, days are shorter. It's just not very much fun.
Well, you made some putts in Japan. You had some stress, though, on the back nine, especially on 16, then the bounce back, birdie on 17. How would you describe that two-hole adventure?
Man, it was an adventure because I've never done that, what I did out of that bunker. I was short-sighted and really trying to kind of like that spark to spin it, and I shanked it. I don't know what else. I've been thinking about that shot nonstop because it actually got very lucky. It just popped on the green. It could have gone in the rough. It could have, I don't know, gone in the water. It got very lucky. But I still was very calm. I didn't get really nervous until that putt on 17 because kind of realizing, okay, I got a two-shot lead coming down 18. This could be to win the tournament. And I hit a perfect putt and went right in the middle of the hole. And, geez, it was special. It really was.
Keegan, there's a lot of chatter on the grounds this week at Congaree about the PGA Tour schedule going forward, the creation of now the full slate of the elevated events. What's your view on how the schedule is going to look going forward? And does it have a large impact on where you're going to play versus where you have in the past?
It definitely will. I mean, you're not only talking about a lot more money, but the world ranking points in those specific tournaments will be huge, be monstrous, be like, not like a major, but pretty close if you have all the top players playing there. So, you know, now that that's out, you know, my caddy and my coach and everybody, we've decided we're going to sit down. You map out the majors, you map out these new elevated events, and then you sort of plan around it. It could affect tournaments that you've always played in the past. If you know, there's three in a row there, or, you know, a tournament that you've never normally played could change your schedule. It's certainly nice to be in them. I feel a little for the guys that aren't going to get to play in those, but it's nice to be in those, and those are going to be big-time events.
Keegan, this new schedule exists in large part because of LIV Golf. As a major champ, world golf champ, South Florida resident who's seen some colleagues leave the PGA Tour, why have you stayed?
Well, I don't blame any of the guys for leaving. They had their choice in what they wanted to do. You know, for me, playing in the U.S. Open in Boston and feeling the crowd and just how unbelievable that was, and then, you know, winning in Japan and just winning on the PGA Tour and hearing from all the guys, hearing from, you know, it's amazing the camaraderie out here of all the guys seem so happy for you. And, you know, I always wanted to play the PGA Tour, and I always wanted to play Ryder Cups. I've always wanted to play and win majors, and I feel like the PGA Tour gives me that best opportunity. I don't hold anything against the guys that left, but it feels good to win on the PGA Tour.
Well, Keegan, I'll never forget bumping into you at Isleworth in November of 2014 after that crushing Ryder Cup loss at Gleneagles. You still had your red, white, and blue Ryder Cup shoes on. What has it been like seeing the Ryder Cup drama of 16, 18, and last year at Whistling Straits play out without you?
It's brutal, man. It's extra hard when you're not in the conversation to be on the team. If you're coming down the last few events and you got a chance, it feels a little different. When you're nowhere on the radar, it's really brutal. Especially since some of my greatest golf memories are in the Ryder Cups, and seeing the boys last year really dominate, it's inspiring. And, you know, I know the clock's ticking for me to get on one more team at least. And it's one of my main goals. I've let the captain know that, and I'm going to work as hard as I can to get on that team. Winning a Ryder Cup would be at the top of my list, you know, other than winning majors. When I'm done playing and I can look back and have a Ryder Cup win, that would mean a lot to me.
Those first two Ryder Cups you were on, Keegan, that was part of this blistering pace you set early in your career, where you won the Nelson in your rookie year, you win the first major you'd ever played, you won a WGC the next year. Well, did that make it tougher when the speed bumps came in terms of the win frequency on tour, because you had been so good, so high, so early?
Yeah, I think it did. It was confusing. I remember a conversation I had with Ernie Els, and he told me that everyone goes through ups and downs in his career. He told me he went through a down in his career. He went to first in the world to eighth in the world, which is a little different, but he said to me, and I'll never forget it, he said, you got to enjoy the climb back to where you are. When you get back, you'll enjoy the thought of working hard and getting there more than actually winning or you know, being back at, you know, top player in the world. And I've remembered that, and he was totally right. And I hold that advice dearly, because at the time it made no sense to me, and now I feel like I'm so proud of getting back. I'm 23rd in the world. I've just won. I'm in the majors again. I feel like I'm going to be a conversation in the Ryder Cup going forward. And I enjoy thinking of those times of being on the range, being in the gym, working as hard as I can, in missing out on some of those tournaments. And it's made it even more special this time.
I'm curious if your aunt Pat Bradley was any kind of sounding board for you during that time. She never really had a slump or a drought in any sense. She won 31 times out there, and never seemed to be much time between wins. But did you rely on her for any kind of advice on how the long haul works for a career?
Well, my Aunt Pat is my hero. I used to go watch tournaments when she was a little older when I was watching, but I would go and I'd have to be there right when she got to the range to warm up. I'd have to follow her around, and I would try to get to the walkways where she was walking from tee to green or whatever, and try to get her attention. And she'd walk straight by me like she didn't see me. She was so dialed in, and I just she was my hero. I remember like just staring at her walking down the fairways in an LPGA Tour event and thinking like, man, I can't believe she gets to do this. And for me, more so of the advice, knowing that that was in my family growing up in New England, knowing that she's one of the toughest people, toughest athletes, I don't know, in my eyes, to ever play. She was just tough and worked hard. And to know that was sort of in my blood, I always felt like I had that little advantage over another person. And maybe that has nothing to do with it, but how cool is it to have a family member in the Hall of Fame in golf and go to watch her play, go to watch her captain of Solheim Cup team, watch her get inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. Those are memories that are unbelievable. And again, I felt like, geez, I got that right there in my family, and it helped me a lot.
Well, you are highly motivated. You do have that in your blood. You're very prideful as well. But I was struck by Justin Thomas congratulating you on social media. And you said, you know, it was cool to hear from your peers. But when you hear from a JT saying how hard you have worked, he's someone who has seen you on the range or in the gym. What did that do in terms of the impact when you saw what JT had to say?
Well, I'm always amazed when you win or do well, just how many people you hear from. And I heard from Ricky Fowler the night, I mean, obviously we were battling down the stretch, and he sent me this unbelievable text. He saw the video with, you know, me talking to my wife and my family, and he's got a family now, and he just said, you know, of course he wanted to beat me, but to watch that interaction, that's what it's all about. And then for a guy like JT, who I see at the Grove on the back of the range, you know, he's one of the hardest workers that I've seen, for him to say that about me means a lot. And to have the respect of your peers almost means more than the wins. And I went up to, I spoke to JT, and I just said, thank you, for that meant a lot. I mean, I'm uncomfortable with people congratulating me all the time, but to hear it from a player like JT, it really means a lot. And I respect, you know, JT and what he's done in the game and how hard he works. And it was really cool. I really, really appreciated it.
Well, you earned that win. You earned those tears as well, Keegan. Well done. Enjoy the week in South Carolina, and thanks for the time.
Thanks, boys. Go Patriots.
Well, coming up next, last season's FedEx Cup winner is making his debut this season. But what will make for a successful run for Rory McIlroy this year? We'll debate that next. Welcome back to Golf Today. The PGA Tour heads to South Carolina this week for the CJ Cup, taking place at Congaree Golf Club in Ridgeland. You can catch live first-round coverage Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. And it's a pretty stout field assembled this week in South Carolina. 6 of the top 10 players in the world, 15 major titles among them. 2 previous CJ Cup winners in Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas, 3 of the 4 winners thus far this season, and 19 players who appeared in the 2022 President's Cup.
Eamon, Rory, a part of the strong field this week. Last fall, he won the CJ Cup at Summit in Las Vegas for his milestone 20th PGA Tour win. Shot that final round 66, included a back 9 eagle, beat Colin Morikawa by a single shot. When you look at his year in review, season in review, as it were, 16 starts, 3 wins, CJ Cup, RBC Canadian Tour Championship. The 1 runner-up finish was at the Masters. 10 top 10 finishes, just 2 missed cuts on the season. So how about a little fill in the blank? A successful season for Rory McIlroy is what we start with. Paige McKenzie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm thinking my criteria might be slightly different than Rory, because he's made a point of saying that he doesn't necessarily need this, something he wants, but it's something that I would like to see and I think would make a very successful season for Rory, and that is to win at the Masters. This has been the storyline for a long time, but I'm going to break it down a little further. And when I see him playing at the Masters, he can play with freedom sometimes. kind of when it doesn't matter. And we go back to last year where he holds out from the bunker and he calls it one of the happiest moments he's ever had on the golf course. And you could see him play with freedom when it kind of didn't matter. And the other point I would make is that this was a similar story at the Open. He played so incredibly well. I felt like it was within his grasp to win another major championship, but the putting was so tentative coming down the stretch. There were so many times where he wasn't getting to the hole. I have hope, though, you guys, moving forward to this year, given what we saw at the Tour Championship, where I felt like he did play with freedom. He putted with freedom. He was getting the ball to the hole coming down the stretch when he needed to. So I have hope that this will happen for him, that it will be a successful season, and it will be capped off with a career grand slam.
Woo! That's narrow, high standards, tough from Paige McKenzie. How would you fill in this blank?
I think that's the dream season,
yeah.
If it happens with the victory at Augusta National. It's hard to define success for somebody who had the season that Rory McIlroy just had, because that wasn't exactly a failure. You know, he won the three times. He earned almost $27 million on the golf course. That's a spectacular failure that we could all do with Damon. But to me, winning any major would constitute a success for Rory, just to end that storyline that's constantly hovering over him, this idea that somehow his career has been stalled for 8 years. When you look at what he's actually accomplished in that 8 years, it's not as though he's been floating on a cloud somewhere doing nothing. To me, that's the micro version of what success constitutes for him. In the macro sense, I think it's seeing all of these tour changes take root because he's kind of driven that narrative forward. Now Tiger's on board doing the same thing. And frankly, I think what makes that happen, it's out of his hands. What he needs is for other players to take an interest, because a lot of guys haven't done anything except complain that nothing's happening and wait for a menu to be served to them that they can then turn their noses up at. And I think it requires buy-in from a lot of players to say, this is the direction we're going, we're going to work with this, instead of guys like Rory McIlroy or Tiger or JT having to be salesmen for this. These guys need to buy in a little more.
He had a lot on his plate, but it seemed like he handled it with aplomb. But I'm not going to say success is only to be the Masters tournament. I can't say success will be judged on 4 days, but I can say success will be judged on 4 weeks. That is winning a major championship for someone who's had 17 top 10 finishes in majors since his last victory. I just don't think that it's possible to be able to look at Rory McIlroy at this point in his career and say, you know, well, he's a great spokesman and he's won 3 FedEx Cup titles. But without that major championship, which he made look so easy, winning the first one by 8 and the second one by 8, he needs to have this be a part of the conversation now, is that he restarts the clock on winning major championships. He's handled everything else with aplomb. He's handled the live thing beautifully. He's become a spokesman, a businessman, highly successful, thoughtful, interest outside of golf. But I think success going forward now, after having more FedEx Cups than anybody, is to start the major championship clock again.
I'm curious what you think on this page, because it's got to be a burden for Rory McIlroy and some other players. We even just talked to Keegan Bradley about the pace he set early in his career. And it's not just that you're judged against the player that you were in that narrow window, but it's your own expectation at a certain point that this is the standard you meet all the time. Do you think it's an unfair burden to put on Rory McIlroy that this is what you need to be doing season in, season out?
No, I don't. Strictly because I think every athlete understands the word potential and what that means. And in a hot streak is truly your potential. So even if it's one good round, even if it's one good tournament, that's what you forever believe is inside you. And the fact that he has posted such an incredible record early in his career and goes on these stretches and can win by 8 shots in a major championship, that's the potential that we have all seen and that he knows exists. So I don't think it's an unfair burden. I think it's actually the carrot that keeps players going. I think it's a necessary part of being an athlete, is to know and to have the belief that you will get there again.
Yeah, I think that Masters, you know, close call must have felt like jet fuel, whereas the close call at St. Andrews had to feel like a gut punch.
Yeah, and I think Southern Hills felt like a little bit of a gut punch for him as well, because the winning score turned out to be 5 under par on Sunday evening. Rory was 6 under par before lunchtime on Thursday, and then just kind of hit a stall button and went reverse. I think that burned him. You saw a little of that fire at Brookline in the US Open, where he played pretty decently but didn't quite get it going. And then St. Andrews, that one's going to hurt.
Yeah. We're going to hear from Rory McIlroy in just a little bit. He's going to spend some time with Todd Lewis. Paige will be back as well. And this week, Rory McIlroy can take the top spot in the official world golf ranking. But is he the best player in the game right now? Send us your thoughts for a chance to be featured on this very show. And so to come on golf today, it's a pressure-packed time of year for those chasing their professional golf dreams. Coming up next, you'll meet another player who made the most of his opportunity at Korn Ferry Tour Q School to secure a card. That's Trent Phillips. He joins us next. Back on golf today, the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying tournament gives players the opportunity to earn their Korn Ferry Tour card for the following season. Each year, players take their shot at advancing through pre-qualifying, first stage, and second stage, all leading up to final stage. Now, the players who get to the final stage are assured their Korn Ferry Tour card for next year with conditions. Here's how it works. The winner exempt for Korn Ferry Tour 2023 season. The players finishing 2 through 10 exempt until the third reshuffle. Typically, the first 12 starts for them, 11 through 40. Typically, first 8 starts for them. Players finishing outside the top 40 earn conditional status. Now, Trent Phillips played his college golf at the University of Georgia, and in 8 starts on PGA Tour Canada, finished 5th or better in all of them. Just notched another top 5 finish in the second stage of Korn Ferry Tour Q School to advance to final stage this month. And Trent joins us now, man. Well done. Q School is a gauntlet. There's nowhere to hide. What part of your mental game are you most proud of and how you handled this?
So going into the week, I've been playing a lot of good golf. I actually played in the Dunhill over in Scotland for the first time. I've never been overseas, so I played in that, and I had a week off. I was playing good golf, and I was ready to play, and I got off to a great start with 3 rounds. I think I shot 66, 68, 67, and was leading through 3 rounds. And, you know, normally when you have that big of a cushion, you're not really nervous or a little worried. But when you're playing for somewhere to play, there was definitely a little more pressure on that final day for some odd reason. I don't really know how to say it, but it definitely felt a little more difficult, I would say. And I'm just excited to be through.
Trent, that T5 finish in second stage gets you at least conditional status next year in the Korn Ferry Tour. You have a chance to obviously improve on that in final stage next month. What do the nerves look like ahead of that? What does the preparation look like ahead of final stage for you?
It's not bad for me. I'm from South Carolina, Georgia area, so it'll be just kind of a quick drive over. I've never actually played in Savannah, it'll feel like at home, and I'm just excited to get down there and get playing. I feel like I'm playing great golf and just keep doing what I'm doing, and I'll take another top 5 and be on my way.
Now, earlier this summer, you got a sponsor's exemption into the Wyndham Championship on the PGA Tour. You skipped an event in Canada that was being held mm-hmm. that same week. Did you have any questions about doing that, given where you were in the points race up there, or did you think it was an opportunity you just couldn't miss?
I guess you could say I definitely thought about it a little bit, but I kind of wanted to come back from Canada for a week and come back to America and play on the PGA Tour. It seemed pretty great, and I was very grateful for that opportunity. I didn't play great. Kind of struggled off the tee that week, which you can't do at Sedgefield. But, I don't really regret going. Like I said, going up and playing in Canada this summer, I don't think did anything but make me better and more prepared for the Korn Ferry Tour. So I'm happy with what I did.
You've played a lot of golf, as you mentioned, in the Carolinas. Tommy Two Gloves Gainey is from South Carolina. There was a picture floating around, video of you playing golf with Two Gloves. What's up with that? Is this a tradition, a hot day, cold day, every day? What's the status of the Two Gloves?
Yeah, so when I was playing in the U.S. Kids World Championship when I was 10 up in Pinehurst, it's like 100 degrees. And I don't remember if I was wearing one glove or no gloves, but I had those some really slick grips on my clubs, and the club actually flew out of my hand. So ever since that hole or that day, I've played every round of golf with Two Gloves on. So I don't see it changing anytime soon.
But it seems to be working, Trent. You played 30 rounds in 8 tournaments in Canada this year, and 21 of those rounds were in the 60s. You've got to feel as though your game is in good shape, both going to the final stage of Q School and for next year, potentially on the Corn Ferry Tour. Are you working on something in particular towards those goals?
Yeah, I think a lot of my success has come from driving the ball a little straighter for the most part. I think if I can always just hit 9 to 10 fairways around, I think I'd give myself a great shot at playing great golf and shooting in the 60s. I like to lean on my wedges a lot. I feel like I'm a great wedge player. So if I can just keep the ball in the fairway and give myself a lot of putts, I tend to do pretty well.
Trent, Chris Hack, no relation. He has one extra A in his last name. One of the great college coaches in the game. What was your time like with Coach Hack at Georgia?
Hack's a great dude. I love playing for Hack and Douglas. They were great guys for me. They let me kind of mature on my own and help me, not make moments bigger than they really were. I feel like I was in a good spot going into college, and you know, I'm definitely a better player now that I went through Georgia, and those guys helped me out a lot. So, yeah, I'm very thankful for those two guys.
Well, as you know, there are Georgia Bulldogs all over the pro game. You got Kiz, Brian Harmon, Russell Henley, on and on. How can you utilize that network to help you as you move along in your career?
Yeah, you know, hopefully when I get out, hopefully to the PGA Tour, I'll be able to lean on a lot of those guys with, you know, how to play certain golf courses, what to do in my free time, and just, you know, just being there for me, comforting me because I'm a young player, and hopefully those guys, I'm sure they'll take the time to help me out any way they can.
Now, Trent, you made it onto the PGA Tour of Canada through the PGA Tour University rankings. Mm-hmm. How important is that pipeline for guys like you there? Is there an argument to be made that some college talent should go straight to the tour, or do you think there's a real value in earning your way there as you're doing right now?
I guess you can make an argument for both points. I think for me, I think I finished 8th on PGA Tour U and going to Canada. I think for me, that's made me a better player this summer. Just getting your feet under you a little bit, playing places that you've never played, or traveling a lot back-to-back-to-back weeks. I've never really done that because in college you're usually tournament here and 2 or 3 weeks off, tournament again. So I think playing a lot back-to-back-to-back helped me a lot and just being prepared for the next level. And yeah, I think it's a great thing that guys kind of earn their way up instead of just getting it given straight to them, because you definitely appreciate it a lot more when you really earn it.
Well, your game seems to check every box, Trent. Congratulations on getting to final stage. And don't be a stranger. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
Well, it's an all-star cast this week at Congaree for the CJ Cup, and we'll hear from a couple of them. Coming up, number one and number two, Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, talking about the new tour schedule. Stay with us. There are 3 candidates for Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour. The winner has been announced shortly, and he will be joining the show. And from the rookie class to the FedEx Cup champion, we're going to hear from Rory McIlroy on all the changes to the PGA Tour schedule. Nothing but winners today, as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today. I'm Eamon, next to Damon. And Damon, Congaree Golf Club, you know, 15 of the top 20 golfers in the world, and there's probably one topic of conversation, which is the new look PGA Tour schedule, which the tour has put some flesh on those bones today. You optimistic that this is a better product in the end for fans in terms of the frequency with which they're going to see the best players in the world show up?
I think so. Speaking of bones, I'm a dinosaur. Been covering this game for a long time. I recall, you know, pre-FedEx Cup era. And then the FedEx Cup, you know, joins the PGA Tour schedule to kind of pull things together, see the best players a little bit more, have some big-time events post-major championships. This, to me, is another incarnation of that, can you imagine the scene at the WM Phoenix Open the same weekend as the Super Bowl, having the best players in the world on that property? It's going to be wild.
It's nice to give the people of TPC Scottsdale something to celebrate.
Yes.
For a change, because they seem so muted and kind of downbeat most of the time at that tournament. But obviously, it's that perhaps more than any other tournament on tour is already kind of like the wildest scene out there. So having the best players in the world, essentially, you're going to see the top 20 guys in the world show up to play there. And a lot of guys will avoid that in the past because it's not really their vibe. Maybe they're just too easily distracted by it. It's not to every player's taste. And it's amazing how many of those guys haven't really been there over the years. And it's going to be interesting now that they don't have the option, really, of kind of sitting that out.
Do you think that the tour can exhale for a moment, or is there no time right now where you can exhale knowing that LIV Golf is, you know, bobbing and weaving as well?
They don't have time to exhale. They may not for quite a while, but there's still a lot of pieces of this puzzle to go together, because when you start looking at 2024 and what that schedule looks like, when we're back to a calendar year schedule, there are still another four events that will rotate, because the four that the tour is in the process of announcing now are rotating. The other nine regular tour events are permanently elevated, but they've got another four to find next year, and because it determines, you know, what sponsors are interested, what tournaments are interested, there may be a moving around on the schedule that a tournament that is typically played at a different time of the year might have to move because of the pacing of where they put these in the schedule as well, because that is a concern to the players, this idea that they're going to play multiple weeks in a row. We've heard Jordan Spieth yesterday talking about that as well.
A lot of moving parts still to come. Well, 1 year ago, Rory McIlroy was moving in the right direction, getting that win, number 20 on the PGA Tour, one-shot victory out in Las Vegas over Colin Morikawa, one of three wins last season, a win that ultimately culminated in his third FedEx Cup title. For more, let's welcome in Todd Lewis, live from Congaree. Todd, what can you tell us the latest on Rory McIlroy trying to reach world number one?
Yeah, I can tell you that he loves his golf course here at Congaree. Fell in love with it when he started playing practice rounds earlier this week. And he has a chance here this week at the CJ Cup to ascend to number one in the world once again. He needs to finish first or solo second, and he's also going to need some help from current world number one Scottie Scheffler. I caught up with Rory just a few moments ago, and I asked him how motivated is he this week in trying to get back to being the top dog in the Wolfpack.
I mean, yeah, I think any time that you've got an opportunity to do something that is, you know, a pretty big deal in our game. Yeah, of course you're motivated, but, you know, I think at this point, you know, I know what I have to do. You know, I have to do my job, but then I still need a little bit of help from Scotty. So, like, I need to go out there and try to win a golf tournament. And if I can do that and play the way I've been playing, then, you know, hopefully, you know, the other stuff takes care of itself. But, you know, if I go out there and win the tournament and Scotty has a great week and finishes second, then it doesn't quite materialize. But I think the thing that I'm proud of is the body of work that I've been able to put in this year. It's at least given me a chance to get back to, you know, the top position in the world. So it's not what I'm thinking about this week. I'm thinking about trying to figure out my way around Congaree, and, you know, it's a new golf course for me, and you know, trying to play well, and if I do that, you know, then, you know, the ranking is just sort of a byproduct of staying in my process. So I guess it's a long-winded way of saying yes, I care about it, but I can't really think about it.
Let's talk about your body of work. You come here with five straight top eight finishes, highlighted by the win at Eastlake. How have you been able to play so well on the course while at the same time carrying the torch, being a leader for the PGA Tour in its competitive battle with LIV Golf?
I think, you know, maybe it's given me a little bit of an edge, like a mental edge on the golf course to, you know, I feel like my words would ring pretty hollow if I didn't back it up with my play on the course. But then also when I get out onto the golf course, it feels like a little bit of an escape, because we have spent so much time you know, talking about whether it be Liv and what the tour need to do to try to, you know, sort of combat that threat with the schedule changes, elevated events, you know, guaranteeing the product more to the sponsors, meaning the top players getting together more often to play. So there's been a lot of time on that, and I think by spending so much time on it, once I get inside the ropes, it feels like no one can get to me. I don't have to take phone calls, I don't have to write emails. And that's, you know, I think if anything, it's given me, you know, it's made me not realize, because I've always realized, but I'm pretty lucky to be a golfer. I wouldn't want to be stuck in an office or in a boardroom all the time. I'm happy that this out here is my office, and I'm very grateful for that.
Rory McIlroy has also been a leader on the PGA Tour from a player perspective in elevating events for the upcoming season or the upcoming year in 2023. There will be some scheduling challenges for these players, these top players who are required to play these events in order to get the full assumption of their PIP money. As a matter of fact, from the Waste Management Phoenix Open until the Dell Match Play, that's 7-event stretch. 5 of them are elevated. And I talked to several prominent players today and how they will manage their schedule moving forward in 2023.
You know, there's always unique challenges with every schedule. But honestly, fortunately for me, I think, you know, with some of the events kind of where they fall, and, you know, and having the opportunity to defend a couple events from last year, I'm extremely honored to be able to do that. I think it's going to be maybe a little more challenging for me just where those events fall and may have to play, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in a row type stretches, which typically I don't. But obviously, anytime you get the opportunity to defend, I think it's, you know, you want to take that. So I'm really excited. I think it's going to be a busy year, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I need to speak to the tour about what the stipulations are in terms of the mandatory events. Do we play all of them? Do we have to play some of them? I know it says mandatory, but I don't know if there's a little asterisk there or not. I think for me, obviously, you know, the tour doing what they're doing and raising the prize funds for those events that are already great tournaments is, you know, it's credit to them and the sponsors for coming out and doing that. I think it's an exciting time for the PGA Tour, and you know, in terms of my schedule, it's great to have so many options now.
I want to follow up on what you just said. Do you anticipate you won't be able to play all those events?
I mean, I don't know. You know, I look at a stretch for myself. From Memorial, Canada, US Open, and then Travelers. You know, you've got 2 elevated events and a major. And just me personally, I, you know, want to play the week before the US Open. And to play 4 in a row in the middle of the season there is, you know, it gets pretty hectic as it is. So I don't really know what the ins and outs are yet. Like I say, I need to speak to the tour and figure that out. But I think on the most part, they're kind of spread out nicely, which, you know, should make them playable.
Yeah, I think that's why you're probably not going to see me as much this fall as you did last fall. I think I'm only playing 3 events just to kind of get that rest. This year was pretty long. I felt like I played a lot. And next year, with all the elevated events, those are events that we're going to want to play. I mean, we show up to play against the best guys in the world, and that's where most of us are going to be. And so those are kind of the events that will be circled on the calendar, but I'm still going to be supporting those other events on tour that I like to support. So planning the schedule is going to be a bit difficult, but I'm definitely excited in where the direction of the tour is going.
I mean, my argument would be, like, we're going to be really busy from January to August. I don't think that anyone is denying that, but from September to December, you've got all the time off you want. So that's my thing. It's basically you play hard, you know, for these 8 months, and then you can take 4 months off. Like, everyone's been asking for an off season. Everyone's been asking to have some time off that they can, you know, just spend time with their families, or they can work on their games, or they can work on their health so that they come back in the new year and they feel ready to go. So, yes, it's busy, but, you know, you got to think longer than just the, you know, that stretch of events that you talked about. You know, we're going to play hard from January to August, and then you guys can take a bunch of time off, which which will be needed after a stretch like that. But at least now we're giving players an option to have an off season.
A couple of interesting notes in regards to the schedule for next year. As a matter of fact, Steve Wilmot, by the way, the tournament director for the RBC Heritage, which is not too far from Congaree, Hilton Head Island, he's on property. He's beaming in the fact that he's going to have the world's best players, many of them, on his island playing in the RBC Heritage next year. But those four events that Eamon reported on, the WM Phoenix Open, the RBC Heritage, the Wells Fargo Championship, and the Travelers Championship, that is just for 2023. The PGA Tour told me today that moving forward, we're just going to have to see where these other elevated events will fall in the schedule and what those elevated events will be. But those events that are set for the schedule for 2023 are just for that year. Talking to several players and managers on property here today, they are under the assumption, having conversations with the tour, that those top players will be excused for one elevated event. They could miss one elevated event for personal or professional reasons, and if they miss that event, they will still get their full payment in their PIP money. So that's what they're hearing, but nothing official yet from the PGA Tour, but an announcement is expected to come pretty soon. Guys?
Todd Lewis reporting on a chilly day in South Carolina. I couldn't tell if they were in the South Pole when you saw Matthew Fitzpatrick with that beanie. Of course, Todd doing a great job reporting on players reacting to this elevated PGA Tour scheduled 2023, and then the four additional events that Eamon Lynch broke yesterday and the tour announced today: WM Phoenix Open, RBC Heritage, Wells Fargo Championship, and the Travelers, as also noted by Todd Lewis. So what do you think? What are you hearing from these players? Eamon, once again, Rory McIlroy, optimist, glass half full, saying, hey, you know, you work hard January to August, and then you can do what you want September to December.
I kind of chuckle wondering what a Major League Baseball player would think watching this when they're doing 162 games a year and these guys are complaining about playing 5 weeks in a row. But that's the culture that really has to be overcome in terms of the independent contractor mentality, where there is no obligation save those that you apply to yourself.
Yeah.
And playing where you want, where you have a professional obligation, where you have a personal affinity for the golf course or some kind of loyalty. And it really, I suppose, comes down to how mandatory is. Mm. I don't think it's going to be compulsory. We've had this conversation on the show several times where there was going to have to be a little bit of leeway in terms of what was going to be asked of these players. Because there are certain times family obligations get in the way that they just simply can't play on a given week. And I think the tour has to recognise that to some extent. And the tour is paying them in advance for this. The player impact program doubled in size from $50 to $100 million and 10 players to 20 players. That started this year. The elevated events start next year. So the tour is paying these guys in advance for the commitment to these tournaments. But you're still going to hear a tremendous amount of grumbling from players in terms of where and how often and how many in a row.
I hope not. I'll tell you what, it's easy to be an independent contractor when you're the only game in town. And the PGA Tour is not anymore. And the players have to know that for the survival and the thriving of this tour, that it may be not exactly the schedule that they want to put together. How important is it that that grumbling that you mentioned is kept to a minimum?
Well, if these guys want to stay at home more often, they should go with the other guys who say they wanted to spend more time at home. They left and went to live, and they have spent the last 2 weeks in Thailand and Saudi Arabia. So there is an alternative. It's not necessarily an alternative that's going to offer a great deal more freedom in terms of scheduling, because there are obligations to play events there as well that are much farther afield than the PGA Tour events are and come with a lot more baggage.
Mm. Well, someone who knows what it's like to put a schedule together, our own Paige McKenzie. Paige, you listen to the reaction from the players from Congaree. What did you make of it?
I think it's just worth pointing out that this truly doesn't affect that many players on the PGA Tour. And that we're talking about a handful of players that are going to be having scheduling issues potentially and having to play more golf. But for the vast majority of the PGA Tour professionals, this is amazing news to have that many more options to earn that much more money. And I think it's worth tempering the fact that this is going to affect so many players when it really, the obligation and the requirement is just those players under the PIP program. So you're talking about 20 players max that are going to be, I guess, have that reduced flexibility. And I think that's an interesting point, because all of professional golfers, I think, typically pride themselves on being independent contractors and being able to do whatever they want. You get 1099s, not W-2s. And I think most players are very proud of that. This is an interesting wrinkle for that top 20.
One thing we've talked about a lot is how the best players in the world kind of have, you know, one mindset, and then the 100 through 125 have a different. Is that just exaggerated in this brave new world of the PGA Tour?
I think it might be exacerbated for sure, because Keegan Bradley made an interesting point earlier on what this also means for the rankings. Now that the world rankings accord a certain number of points based on who you compete against, The stronger the field you're against, the more points are at stake. Well, it's not going to get any stronger than these elevated events we're going to see next year. So in a way, players who would want, for whatever reason, to sit out these events, they're going to lose more ground than they would potentially. There's much more opportunity in these events for headway, both financial and in terms of world rankings, too.
I would agree with that. And I think for most, the average tour player, I would consider that this to be incredible opportunities because they get to go head-to-head. I think your world ranking is actually less stable because you're required to play more. And in those tournaments that have all of the best players, there's so much more up for grabs that could provide maybe more volatility. A lot will remain to be seen, but that's kind of been my take on it, is that it actually might provide more opportunity and volatility in the world rankings.
If you are 75th in the PGA Tour FedEx Cup standings, I mean, there's a lot of incentive to work your way into the top 20 in those elevated events and an opportunity to compete, you know, where you want and to compete head-to-head, which is what these players are talking about.
And if you're a fan of golf and you want to see the best players compete week in, week out, then you're going to see that a lot more frequently. And you don't have to wait too long in 2023 to do it. It's only a couple of days into the year when they're going to show up in Maui at Kapalua for the Century Tournament of Champions.
Been a busy year, a lot of news, Eamon and Paige, and we have more news on this Wednesday. The site of the 2023 U.S. Open, L.A. Country Club, will have more major hosting duties in the future. The USGA announcing that LACC will also host the U.S. Open in 2039, circle the calendar, as well as its first U.S. Women's Open in 2032. Now, with these two additions, LA Country Club will have hosted 6 USGA championships in its history. And after the break, we're joined by a very special guest who has a very deep and emotional connection to Congaree. You won't want to miss it.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to golf today. Probably not a big surprise to most golf fans. Cameron Young has been announced as the 2021-22 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. Here he is with the commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan. All smiles, big moment. The man from New York, and you see the season that he had. 25 starts, 5 runner-up finishes, 7 top 10 finishes, 12 top 25, 7 missed cuts, and there he is, named the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. Let's say hello to Cameron Young. Congratulations, Cam. I'll tell you what, it has to be pretty cool to get to a new job and immediately you make an impact right away. What will you enjoy most about this award when you look back 20 years from now?
I think it's just a very special one historically. I mean, given Arnold Palmer's contributions to our game and the list of names that have been able to take this home is very cool, and I'm very thankful to be a part of it.
Cameron, it seems hard to believe that it's only been a year ago since you began your rookie year, and you got comfortable pretty early. You were T2nd in your second start, the Sanderson. How did you find that comfort so early?
I think that week is a very big one for me. I think that one kind of allowed me to get comfortable. I don't know if I really was before that, but having some early success was definitely huge for me, just moving forward to know that I had at least been there once, and I think helped me a lot throughout the year.
And you ended up being there quite a lot because your 7 top 10s were all actually 7 top 3s with the 5 seconds and a couple of thirds. When you look back on that year, is there one in particular that slipped away from you where you thought you learned most that particular week from the being in the hunt and not quite getting it done?
Yeah, I think I don't know if I really let any of them slip away. I feel like maybe the PGA, which was one of the thirds, I think I might have shot one or two over on the back nine that day. But yeah, I think for the most part, I played some good golf and got beat. I mean, Open Championship, I shot 19 under and Cameron Smith beat me. Finished second at Riviera. I think Joaquin set all kinds of records that week. So there's, you know, a bunch of those weeks I was close, and but I don't think I had any of them, you know, in my hands quite. But, you know, hopefully I'll be back there again soon.
Bermuda grasses, rye, fescue, Hoannah. Why did your game adapt so well to golf courses you'd never seen before, different styles of golf courses, different time zones, et cetera?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think throughout the year I drove the ball really well, which I think can make new golf courses simpler if you're, you know, hitting it where you're looking and in the fairway a lot. I think that had a huge part in my success at new places, especially some of those little more difficult ones.
From new places to the old course, you mentioned it, 150th, the town's a buzz. Mm-hmm. Jack, Tiger, Gary, Tom Watson, everybody's basically living in the same town for a week. What moments from that week come back to you still?
A lot of them. Certainly playing that 18th hole every day, not just the last day. And even just the practice rounds. I mean, getting to go out and walk around that place and kind of enjoy all the nuances of it. Obviously, tournament golf, you don't spend as much time kind of just looking around. But the practice rounds, you know, out there with my father, it was just very cool getting to take that place in and kind of experience everything it has to offer.
Cameron, you're the fourth straight rookie of the year who didn't win during that season with Sungjae and Scottie Scheffler and Willie Zalatoris. So obviously all those guys have gone on to win since. Do you feel in the position you're in now with the experience you have that there's a little bit more of a weight of expectation on you next year, even if it is self-imposed?
I definitely have some expectations of myself. I don't think it really changes much for me inside the ropes. I know all those guys have gone on to do very, very well. And I would hope that I'll do the same. I put plenty of pressure on myself in the first place. So as far as outside pressure and expectation, I think it'll mostly come from me anyway.
Speaking of expectations, I think that's an MLB logo on your sleeve. Yankees fan, from what I've been told. How are you handling October, Aaron Judge and the boys? How are you feeling about the team?
Yeah, I know he's had a pretty incredible season. And I haven't watched a ton the last couple weeks being in Japan and on the road, but I'll have to over the next little bit and see how it goes.
How about your own backstory with sports? You grew up playing a lot of different sports. When did you make the transition ultimately to focus on golf and, say, put down the hockey stick, for example?
I probably, at about 14, 15, I stopped playing baseball after eighth grade and I think hockey after my freshman year of high school. I really enjoyed both of them, but just with us, we used to go to Florida in the winter so that I could practice a little bit, and it just got to be probably too busy, and decided to focus on golf at that point.
Well, last question before we let you go, Cam, because that trophy does look kind of heavy that you're holding on to there.
It's so heavy, yeah.
Who better than the Rookie of the Year to give us an early bookies tip on who the Rookie of the Year might be next year? Is there anyone in the class coming on to the PGA Tour this year that we should know about that you have your eye on because you've played with them?
Yeah, there's certainly a few. One that comes to mind is Justin Suh. I know he's had a lot of success at a lot of different levels, and I've played with him in college. He was very, very much better than me at the time, and I know he's solid all around. But there's plenty of guys, I think, just like our class, that it really could be anyone, and you never quite know who will thrive and play their best golf out here.
Strong pipeline of the PGA Tour, but not many as strong as you. Cam, congratulations on Rookie of the Year, and enjoy the week in South Carolina.
Thank you. Will do. I appreciate it.